Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, as good as we can be after a loss, which actually I know I definitely want to address in terms of that good mood. But the end of week 11 right now, the tail end of it. Unfortunately, the Packers, as mentioned, did lose 34-31 to the Colts in overtime in Indianapolis. So, Jesse, right off the bat, is there anything that you want to mention?
This one stung. And just because I think we were the better team, personally, on the field, we just kept shooting ourselves in the foot and just didn't get it done. It stung because, I mean, the Colts are really good. I thought we matched up really well and played. It was tail of two halves. First half, everything kind of was going good. Graham gave up some points, but it seemed like we were scoring at will. In the second half, it just, the wheels fell off. Pretty disheartening, but I think it's a big game where we can go two ways from it. You know, you can grow from this loss and get stronger and, you know, come together, or this could kind of mentally break down some teams, you know, where, you're so close and it could be just a reoccurring problem. So we'll see where we go from here.
You said the Packers were the better team. I was going to stipulate first half, absolutely 100%. Second half, though, I thought the Colts played really well, exceptionally well on defense especially. And certainly on offense, I think they were pretty consistent throughout the entire game. I'll be honest. Maybe this is me being too optimistic suddenly. I haven't felt this good about a Packers game probably since they beat the Texans. Just because, okay, you know, the loss to the Vikings was Swiss cheese. as cheesy and as Swissy as Dalvin Cook could make it. The 49ers, it was, okay, what do you take away from beating that team? Again, my co-host of the Fantasy Pod, Alessandro, called it the 29ers, really. So it's tough to feel really good about that, and then barely beating the Jaguars. I thought the Packers played so much better than they did last week against the Jaguars. And it shows, like, the Packers could play so poorly, and the Jags are such a bad team that the Packers would still win. And they did. Not the case against the Colts. And even, you know, vast improvement from one week to the other, and that still wasn't enough to beat this team. So first off, kudos to the Colts. But I thought there was a lot of good things that came from this game.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it shows we belong. Like, all the trash talk when people say we're not built to play physical teams, that's BS. The Colts are physical. They're tough. We matched them. Kenny Clark was kicking the crap out of every lineman on that team. I mean, Quentin Nelson included. He was kicking. He was taking his lunch. So we belong. Yeah. For a game that we lost, we can clean up some things. We belong. We can hang with any team on any given Sunday or Monday or whatever other day you want to play. So I think that's why it stung so much, you know, because it was a good game. You know, the Jaguars game, that was ugly, still a win. And then this game, it's like, okay, you know, we had so many opportunities to close it out and get it done, and we just didn't. So, and hats off to the Colts. You know, they could have bellied up after, you know, going down, giving up the score right before half, and they came out with a long drive. I'm looking at all the drives right now. They came out, nice long drive, and scored, and they scored again and scored again. And, you know, and good for them. They're a tough team.
And I mean, so right after half, long drive for the Colts, 3-and-out for the Packers. Long drive for the Colts, 3-and-out for the Packers. Suddenly the defense played basically almost the entire third quarter. And still they were able to maintain 2 weeks in a row. And this is maybe one of the only good things that came out of the Jags game. It's 2 weeks in a row they haven't allowed the big run. Longest run this game was 19 yards, and it wasn't even a Jonathan Taylor. It was to the wide receiver Harris on an end around, got 19 out of it, which, you know, not great, but those big 70-50 yard runs, like, they've managed to eliminate that from the game. We haven't seen any since Dalvin Cook. We've seen some big passing plays. Obviously there was the big Michael Pittman play, not sure about the coverage there, but just the run defense is doing a really good job containing. I thought they actually played pretty well. Yes, the same problem exists. They can't stop anyone in short yardage. They're always going to be given up positive runs. But the lack of big runaway plays, I think, was huge. So that's, you know, kudos there. You already mentioned it. I think this was Kenny Clark's, I mean, very easily his best game. And I think especially, you know, the second and third quarters, I think, were probably two of the three best quarters of football he's played. The only other game that comes close is the, you know, the second quarter against the Vikings when he got hurt. That was maybe the only time, and this is probably the first time since that we've seen this form of Kenny Clark. We know it tends to be late year, usually December, when that starts to happen. Maybe, hopefully, you know, you mentioned it in the preview. This game kind of feels like a playoff atmosphere. Hopefully, maybe that convinced Kenny Clark that, okay, playoffs start now, and he's going to get to that end of season mode that he seems like he finds every year. So, you know, I argue the best game of his career came against the Bears last year. A little early for the preview yet, but it'd be nice if that continues against Chicago next week.
Oh, definitely. And I agree. Yeah. I thought the run defense, they were doing their job, right? A lot of times on first down, you knew the Colts were going to try to run the ball, play, you know, control the clock, which they did. Wow. What time of possession, especially in that second half when three and out, you know, fumble. Yeah, it killed us. But the run defense, I thought, played good enough to win. And then we would get in third and five, third and six, third and nine, and the defense could not get off the field. And the Mike Pettine system right now, it just makes you scratch your head why it's just such a soft zone. And like that third, I think, what was it, third and 19? They pick up 13, and it's a manageable fourth down. It's like, that is not a win. Like, I don't know. You keep doing the same thing over and over and over. I mean, that's the definition of insanity if it's not working, right? And that's what third down, we just can't get off the field when we need to. And it's the same thing. You know, you got your corners healthy. They're back. They're playing. And it's just the soft off zone stuff. I would have liked them to man up just a little bit more, you know, maybe send some more pressure than three and four every time on third down. I don't know. It just seems like it's like a scared. I know they don't want to give up the big play, and I understand that you don't want to give it up. But does it matter if you're going to give up, you know, 13 play drives that end in scoring anyways? I mean, there's got to be something's got to give.
Well, and we could, blaming scheme, and I've been one of the bigger Mike Pettine fans. Not so much when he got hired, but once he was here and you saw the results, I was like, okay, yeah, I was really happy that LaFleur retained him. I thought that was key to the defensive continuity. But on that Michael Pittman touchdown, I mean, to completely vacate everything and to leave a single middle linebacker covering it, what it seemed like it was going to be about, you know, 30 yards of depth, or maybe not quite that, but like 20 yards of depth, and basically the sideline to sideline, you got Christian Kirksey, that entire zone. I don't know, maybe someone did actually run the wrong play, and maybe someone blew their assignment. I don't know. But it, no one looked out of place, because again, it seemed like Kevin King, and you know, you watch that play, Kevin King's lined up with Pittman, but you know, Pittman to cross over, that didn't seem like that was King's responsibility. And I mean, Josh Jackson wasn't on the field at all, so we can't blame him. So then where does that leave it? It probably does leave it on Mike Pettine's shoulders.
It was crazy, man. Like you said, you know, it was like they played deep thirds, you know, and then you have a middle linebacker. If you're going to play that defense and you have to, you know, they have to go that far, why isn't like a guy like Raven Green or somebody with a little bit more speed, you know, be your dime linebacker on that play, you know, to take care of that underneath stuff? Because Kirksey is not catching a receiver. It's not even fair to even put him in that situation, because it's not going to happen. And even Troy Aikman said, I don't know what the Packers D was doing on this play. It was that blatantly ugly. It just, and maybe someone did miss the assignment. You're right. Maybe they did, but I don't know. Head scratching.
You'd almost hope someone missed an assignment. Like, how can it possibly be that wide open, right? But Also, I got to say, you know, the offside penalties, that was a thing. But the Packers were the more disciplined team, since it seemed like the Colts just penalty after penalty. And that's the thing. Anytime the Colts had a long run, a big breakaway run that ended in a touchdown, there was a hold call. So that was nice to see. So the Packers technically were the more disciplined team, even though they had, I think they had seven penalties, five on the defense. And again, I think most of that was offside. So, you know, trying to time the snaps. Okay, maybe you know, knowing that it's such a tough opponent, such a great offensive line, trying to get the edge against them. Don't pull that against the Bears, because I don't think they need that against the Bears. Again, this isn't a Bears preview. This is a Colts recap, so we'll move on. But I think that covered everything defensively. They stopped Nyheim Hines.
They did. It was nice to see it. I mean, they schemed him well, where you saw Jair Alexander on him a few plays. You know, they just did a few different things to take away that weapon, which I'm like, okay, that's great. You know, we're doing that. And then, then you have the other blunders. But, and I'll give the defense some credit. They were gassed. I mean, they were on the field the whole second half. It could have got a lot uglier, and they held them to field goals instead of, a lot of those long drives. They kept them out of the end zone on a few of them. So there was a lot to work with. Rashawn Gary had a really good game. Z was good. Preston Smith was god awful again. I just don't know what happened to that guy. And that scheme too, where he's dropping, trying to make coverage, they picked on him. It just wasn't going to work, where we had him dropping back, trying to cover tight ends, and they took advantage of it. Hats off to the Colts on it. But after the first time, that shouldn't even be an option.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've seen much more success of that with Barnes or even Kirksey or even Kamal Martin do that. And I know coverage was part of the reason that Preston Smith was brought to Green Bay initially. It was, okay, he's a linebacker that can fill every role. But, yeah, maybe force-feeding him a little bit too much there. You know, let him make the impact rushing the passer, which he can do really well. Right? Give him in those situations more. But, again, having him in coverage means more Rashawn Gary, who, as you mentioned, had a good game. Offensively, they had a lot of good moments, but again, the three and outs in the second half really sunk the team, because it forced the defense to be on for insane amounts of time, and you know, they got less and less efficient as the game went on, as which should naturally expect considering how tired they would have been. So again, you know, the defense playing pretty well and the offense letting them down. I think that's how I saw that second half, because Colts have a great defensive unit. Again, kudos to them; they played amazing. It's Packers should not be scoring 3 points in a half. Doesn't matter the opponent. They're too talented a team to be scoring 3 points in a half. So, you know, if I had to put the loss on any unit more than the other, I would say it's on the offense. You know, it was great of a first half they had. You really couldn't afford to go three and out after three and out. Knowing how long both of those offensive possessions were in between, it just... you needed to sustain some type of drive. And I remember saying, even that second one, even if they punt here, just get to midfield, give the defense a break, set the Colts back far, but no, this was the three and out. So that was disappointing. The symmetry on both sides, both teams, their starting centers had to leave the game. Obviously, Ryan Kelly came back for the Colts. Corey Linsley left. I believe they said it was a back injury, so that's kind of been an issue for him. I know last year against the Lions in Week 17, he missed almost the entire game, and Lucas Patrick came in at center. Not the case now. Elton Jenkins, of course, he's the one that moved to center, which tells me a few things. So, I do wonder if Lane Taylor was still playing and Lucas Patrick was available as a backup, I think he would have gone in at center. And they would have kept Jenkins at guard. But because Patrick's already starting, I don't think they wanted to disrupt him. I think, okay, get in the zone of being the right guard, that's going to be your role for the year. Whereas Jenkins, they know they can trust him no matter where. They feel freer to move him around. I don't know that necessarily he's a better center. Well, I mean, he's a better offensive lineman than Lucas Patrick. So I guess he is a better center than Lucas Patrick too. But it doesn't, you know, you lose the edge at guard to make up for its center. I'm not sure that that's a trade-off I would make. I was maybe just knowing that, okay, Patrick last year when Lindsley left, he was the one that came in at center. I was a little surprised initially that it was Jenkins that moved, but I wonder if it's just because of that. They don't want to disrupt what Patrick's doing right now at the right guard spot. Whereas last year they had Billy Turner there, so they could afford that.
Yeah, and we also might see a preview that, you know, that might be our center of the future. I just don't see how we're going to be able to afford to keep Lindsley around, especially how good he's played this year. So, and Jenkins, I mean, that guy can do everything. It's just amazing. Maybe they felt confident with him calling the plays there. Runyon, every time he's come in, has held his own. So that's nice to have. We can have guys moving around. Hopefully Lindsey's back. You know, we want our starting five, but Lane Taylor, like you're saying there, you know, Lane Taylor is not going to get paid much next year. they might bring him back, you know, and hopefully he can stay healthy and you can have him at a guard spot and, you know, Jenkins can play center or Patrick play center, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think we're sitting in good shape right there with what we can do and how these guys are so versatile.
Seems like every week it's like, okay, is Jenkins the right tackle of the future? Is he the left tackle of the future? Is he the center? It almost gives them sort of flexibility in the draft and free agency. They can go after just the best players, not, oh, we need a center. Oh, well, you know, if they find a really good guard out there, they can, okay, well, then we can put Jenkins at center. Or if vice versa, if they're able to afford a good center. Because I guess Lucas Patrick would be a free agent too. So maybe extra little complication there. But Jenkins' transition, I think, thought was seamless. There was a couple plays. He had to block Eric Armstead one-on-one, and he succeeded. That's a tough defensive assignment to take one-on-one. And Jenkins seems like he's got no problem. I'm not sure what was the bigger bright spot in that game. Was it Jenkins or Kenny Clark? Either way, seeing the middle of both fronts push back, in, you know, obviously positive direction for the offense, negative direction for the defense. And get that penetration and that separation, get off blocks, specifically for Clark, I'm talking there too. That was a real good sight to see. So real positive encouragement on both fronts. I mean, Jenkins has not played a bad game in his career yet, so I think we expect him to play at this standard, but for Clark, it's good to see, and hopefully that it's the start of the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. And with, like, the rest of the offense, like, when it was clicking early, like, it was clicking, like, it was working. We were moving the ball, you know, and then turnovers matter, right? And, you know, LaFleur preaches, you know, you have to win the turnover battle. And playing in a dome, not bad weather, but we just can't. And the Colts were attacking the football, but we can't put the ball on the ground. And Shepard, I don't know if he's going to have a job, because special teams, we did get our butts kicked. I will say that. We couldn't even get it to the 25-yard line on a lot of the returns. I know Irvin wasn't in the game, but still, that it was ugly. And then with the fumble there, I mean, that's backbreaking. It's hard to come back from stuff like that. So, you know, the Packers are a good team. They still hung around, but it's hard to win when you have four turnovers in a game, you know. And one of my problems, I think the play calling, I don't know, everything looked good in the first half. Then the second half, you know, these third and ones, third and two, run the football. We pride ourselves on, you know, wanting to be tough, but it's just like we don't trust our backs to pick up a yard, which I don't know why, because I think they can. And I'm not saying do it every time, but just looking at this, you know, it's third and one, and we're doing a deep pass, or we're doing, you know, a short one over the middle, you know, right into the teeth of their defense with Leonard right there. I just question some of those calls where, like, you know, this is where you man up, you know, hat on hat, and pick up a yard, you know. So That kind of bothered me a little bit, you know. We just kind of went away from the running game quite a bit, in my opinion. Only 10 carries for Jones. How many did can't remember how many we had with Williams, but maybe, it wasn't a lot. Yeah,
maybe half that. He might have had 5 carries.
Yeah,
more targets.
That's not a lot, you know. Yeah, he had 5 carries for 12 yards, which wasn't great or whatever, but that's 15 carries, and that's not enough, in my opinion. You want to get closer to 20, especially with these backs.
I will say, and thinking about some of those third and fourth down plays, it does seem like, okay, you know, Matt LaFleur designs one guy to be open, but it'd be nice to maybe get more options. Okay, instead of having everyone run clear and one guy there, and then it forces, okay, it's the one-on-one play. It reminds me of the... I think I know exactly which player you're talking about. Third and one or fourth and one, fourth and one, they should have had it. And it was, you know, the pass out of the backfield to Williams. It almost worked, but the play got rushed. And because the play got rushed and the way the routes were set up, everyone was deep. Like, there was no other option for Rodgers except that one play to Williams. And Grover Stewart, I think, came through. On John Runyon, unfortunately, was one of his worst, one of his lowlights in terms of block plays. But it didn't give Williams the time to develop, and there was no other outlet anywhere. So I would just like to see better route combinations on third and shorts, fourth and shorts. I feel like, yes, they're trying to clear everything out so that the one guy underneath is open and can not only get the first down, but make a big play. But at a certain point, why not just run some quick slants with three or four guys and see whoever gets separation and go to that player, right? Whoever can get that quick separation, give Rodgers the option as opposed to kind of pigeonholing him into one play. I think that's maybe my complaint more so than not running it, I think, just because that was a tough front. And, I mean, here's the thing. Aaron Rodgers is amazing. So if I'm never going to complain that they let him throw it on fourth down, even if it's fourth and one. But just set him up to succeed a bit better. I mean, that's why we didn't like Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, I agree. And Matt LaFleur even spoke on that play. You know, he said Aaron Rodgers held on as long as he could to try to get him open, and it didn't, you know, and then he kind of said, you know, maybe the play call wasn't the best. So at least LaFleur is seeing that, because I'm agreeing with you where even move the pocket a little bit and get Aaron, you know, they always did that stuff around the goal line, you know, where you just kind of have a few options, have Rodgers move the pocket. Someone's going to get open, or someone's going to work themselves open somewhere. But when you only have one option to get it out and they blow it up or get a little bit of pressure, it's already a fail, right? It, you know, Adams the week before made that great catch on fourth down, but that was the only option, you know, and that guy was all over him. It was a hell of a catch, but he doesn't make that catch. I mean, that play really is like, well, that wasn't probably the best play because it was the only option. So I agree with you, you know, run a few slants, you know, move the pocket a little bit, you know, do some rub routes or, you know, something over the middle to get somebody open.
Actually a play they ran a few times and it worked well. Rodgers rolling right and having a tight end roll out with him. And if no one gets open deep, you dump it off on fourth and one. That's probably going to work. And if it doesn't, you've got a blocker there that Rodgers could, it increases Rodgers' odds of keeping it. So even that option's available. So it's a good point with the pocket movement and not make it as susceptible to the Colts pass rush. So play calling was the biggest loser, it seems like. Actually, there's one more. This group of people is who I'm most disappointed with this week. Packers player, it has to be Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He was, it's okay, you can't fumble, right? You just can't fumble, especially in that moment. Running a little loose with the football too. So Valdes-Scantling deserves all the blame in the world for that. He messed up. And he, you know, he's had some bad drops before. This is probably the worst mistake he's ever made.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was having a good game. He made a big play to force it into overtime. It's just, it's run so hot and cold. And I hate it for the kid. It's his first fumble, by the way, too. So terrible timing, right? It just seems like the MVS curse of any time it's a bad timing. He just can't get right with timing. I hate it for the kid, but yeah, it's inexcusable, right? You're NFL football players. You know, you cannot, you shouldn't be fumbling anyways, but at that time, in that spot where we're at, it's like, cover that ball up, buddy. I mean, which I know they missed a blatant face mask before that, so that would have put us up the field. You know, I don't want to bring flags in it, so maybe the play call would have been different, but yeah, you can't. I hope to do a lot of ball security drills this week, I tell you what, because there was way too many fumbles.
I do want to rant about something real quick, but so it was another wide receiver screen. Those have been getting telegraphed way too easily the last few weeks. This week, I really like how Matt LaFleur designed some of them, bring guys out into motion to create the wide receiver screens, as opposed to just bunch formation and teams know it's coming. So I thought that was a really good adjustment of, we're going to start disguising the screen a bit better. Because they love to run that wide receiver screen. Like, it's one of the staple plays for Matt LaFleur. So now it seems like he's figured out ways to make it less obvious, because that's been a problem, especially last few weeks, but really all season, is teams see it and they know it instantly. Oh, yeah, that's that screen. Get out there. Get guys out there. Get numbers. So it's really good. Impressed that doing it with tight ends, too, not just three, you know, smaller wide receivers to really telegraph it. You know, get the tight ends out there and allow them to be used as blockers, or even the person catching it behind the screen. So great on that. So yeah, Valdes-Scantling messed up, having a great game, made some key plays. And Jesse said the word inexcusable. Yes, his football play on the field is inexcusable, but for a player to mess up, we as Packers fans, I could rant about Brandon Bostic, you know, forever if I wanted to. I never sent death threats to Brandon Bostic. Marquez Valdes-Scantling doesn't deserve to have people who, I guarantee most of the people never stepped on the football field, to question his integrity and to send him death threats. Are you kidding me, Packers fans? And I mean, this isn't other teams' fan base. Like, these are Packers fans doing this. And I don't necessarily, I would hope that none of our listeners are these fans doing this. I think our listeners are more well educated than that and just decent enough human beings. But no matter how bad Valdez-Scantling was on the field, the biggest Packers loser this week is any fan that sent him any hateful message, but especially anything involving death threats. That's inexcusable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to call it was a sorry day for being called a fan, because those people aren't fans. I mean, you said it all, man. It's pathetic. You know, it's a football game. In the grand scheme of life, it's still a game, and you're going to do this to a man that he made a mistake. We all do, you know, and unbelievable. Internet tough guys, you know, saying things that are just terrible, you know. And I loved it that Davante Adams jumped to his defense right away, and he said, "My team's got me." So that shows a lot of character on for him and this football team in this locker room. So I'm proud of this organization for how they stick together. But yeah, that's sad that people act that way.
And of course, that doesn't represent the majority of people, again, who call themselves Packers fans, because you're right. That's doing that. You basically hand in your fandom if you're going to, you know, wish death upon a player that's on the team you're on. I wouldn't condone it on an opposing team either, but I get doing that in jest and trying to, you know, it's the fans trying to make it tough on the road team coming to the home. I get all that stuff. But like after the game, to send that to a player on your own team, yeah, that you lose the right to be called a fan at that point.
Yep, it's terrible.
All right, well, not terrible was this game. I think as much as it's a loss, again, I feel better now than I have in a month with the Packers, which is weird. But they came to play. I'm hoping this wasn't just you've alluded to it, thinking this might be the hardest game on the schedule the rest of the way. I really hope the Packers were thinking that, and that's why they came up to play. I hope that they just, this is the time of year. Do or die now. It's a tough conference. We want to get that one number one seed. We got to win every game we can and play with that attitude. I really hope that carries over to the Bears game, which we're going to preview on the next episode, they'll follow us on Twitter at @FBC_Packers. Jesse's at @Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores. Get access to all the great written content from Full Press Coverage, all of our podcasts, as well as access to the Full Press Radio Network. Download the Full Press Coverage app for free. So, Jesse, final thoughts?
Yeah, Bears week, man. Like, this is what it's all about, you know? Go Pack, go.
Yeah, absolutely. The oldest foe. Get to know them real well. Looking forward to Jesse's article on that. And looking forward to talking on the next episode of the Full Press Packers Pod.